Welcome to Real Recognition Radio, a program designed to promote a positive work environment. Your hosts are Roy Saunderson and S. Max Brown. In this hour, you will be motivated to motivate, increase morale, productivity, loyalty, and reduce turnover. Learn how some companies get it while others don't. Now, here are your hosts, Roy and Max.
Welcome to Real Recognition Radio, the show that's all about building relationships, inspiring greatness, and creating a workplace where people can thrive. I'm Max Brown, along with my colleague Roy Saunderson, and we're from the Recognition Management Institute. And Roy, I have to admit, I'm pretty excited about the show we have ready for today.
Absolutely. We've got three of the best on the show today, and I think we're going to learn an awful lot about leadership.
Well, I certainly agree with that. And for me, it's a lot of things that come to mind, you know, like why is fear-based leadership still so pervasive in the workplace? And if servant leadership is more effective, then why is it perceived as weak, if it is perceived as weak? And I want to get their opinion on that as well. And let's talk also about the importance of emotional intelligence. And perhaps, hopefully, we'll be able to figure out what are some of the bigger obstacles to great leadership? Because it seems like no matter how quickly or much we change, some things remain the same. And I think some of that comes back to just basic values and the way we treat each other.
Absolutely. I think you're right there, Max. And hopefully we'll learn more.
Go ahead.
I said hopefully we'll learn more.
Well, absolutely. I totally agree. And let's do it then. Our guests today are Steve Keating, Dave Carpenter, and Ted Coyne. And for many of those who follow us on Twitter, you'll recognize all three of these folks. Let me introduce each one of them individually, and then we'll start this round-robin conversation with the three of them. Steve Keating, of course, known on Twitter as Lead Today, is currently manager of selling skills for the Toro Company, working with Toro's commercial, consumer, LCB, irrigation, and international businesses. He's also the developer of the Toro Professional Sales Certification process. And prior to joining Toro, he was with the Dale Carnegie Organization, where he spent 8.5 years selling, writing, and presenting training in sales, customer service, public speaking, managing people, developing leadership skills, and managing a business. Steve, welcome to the show.
Thank you, guys. It's a pleasure to be here. Look forward to it.
Well, I'm very grateful, and despite the warm weather in Minnesota.
Yes, it has been incredibly warm for us.
Hey, no, Max, Dave Carpenter, one thing you missed on that bio, I mean, that's a great bio, but you missed that Steve Keating is one of the nicest human beings anybody will ever meet. I mean, this is a whole panel of great people, but this is just a nice man, and Toro's very lucky to have him out representing Toro.
Dave, I think that's well said. That is well said, and I completely agree with what you're saying. In fact, it was Steve that actually reached out to me when I first started on Twitter and encouraged me along the way and gave me some coaching skills there to how I could make my contribution there more effective. So I totally agree with you, and I appreciate what you just said. So, and Dave, with that segue, let me introduce you as well, a prolific author, an inspiring speaker, and well-known consultant and recognized humanitarian. After a distinguished career in the international accounting firm of Coopers & Lybrand, now PricewaterhouseCoopers, Dave founded Partners for Market Leadership, an Atlanta consulting firm. And last year, he launched an Accelerate Success Mentoring Program, which is a year-long personal development program. He is a graduate of Outward Bound Wilderness Experiences and recently completed work with Cheryl Richardson in a year-long program to master the art of extreme self-care. Fascinated by what you're doing there, Dave, and I have to mention that I started actually my career with Outward Bound programs, but taking people on experiences rappelling off the Great Wall and things like that in China.
Wow, great.
So,
I'm a six-time graduate, or as they said, I needed to come back six times to get it right the first time.
Well, I think there's more to it than that, but I am grateful you're here. And again, you recognize good people here on the show, and certainly you're one of those, and grateful you're here with us.
Thank you.
Thank you. And last but not least, obviously, Ted Coyne, one of the most influential business leaders on Twitter with a following of over 50,000. And we won't mention that all of these gentlemen have tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of followers on Twitter, very influential in all respects. He's a founder of Twitter's Lead Biz Community, a community I'm a big fan of, and is the forum that attracts some of the top minds in business leadership and innovation. He's an author of Five Star Customer Service and Spoil 'Em Rotten. Prior to writing his first book, Ted was founder and CEO of Coyne Language School, a B2B company he brought from his living room to a $10 million valuation in 4 years by focusing relentlessly on customer service. Ted, thank you for being on the show.
The pleasure is all mine, Max, and I'm just honored to be with these
so,
other guests.
I got to add to what I said about Steve Keating. There aren't a lot of CEOs or former CEOs on Twitter, but Ted is one of them, and one of them that really shines. And I think when you talk about leadership, it's just always great for me to see CEOs taking the time to be on Twitter, because I think their voice gets heard a lot. So besides being a fellow runner with me, Clydesdale Division, I've just announced it to the world. Yeah. But with code words, some might not know what the Clydesdale Division is, but another great guy. I'm so pleased to be here with Steve and Ted.
Well,
thank you.
I have to admit, when I figured and started this communication to see if we could get the three of you on the same show, I wasn't sure we could accomplish it. But when it worked out, I called Roy immediately and expressed my enthusiasm for what this show might be. So I look forward to it, and I'm grateful you're all here. And while we're here, if I could, I let's just get right to a big question in my mind, because we seem to hear about this a lot, and that's leadership failures despite the treasure trove of knowledge and advice on how to be a great leader. So why is it that you think so many leaders fail? And I don't know who wants to take that first. Maybe we'll start with you, Ted, in your former role and what you currently do, and then Dave and Steve will take a crack at why is there so much failure despite this treasure trove of information out there that says what we should be doing?
I think it's a matter, and I'll bet I'll get some agreement here. I think it's a matter of people thinking in the old ways. 20th century leadership is alive and well, unfortunately, or maybe alive and sick, but it's certainly still pervasive. And 20th century leadership is based on command and control. It's based on the theory that rank has its privileges, and so that's why you see CEOs making 400 times what the entry-level workers making at a company, and a lot of people still think that's fine. It's based on controlling people's behavior in order to disseminate the thoughts that happen at the top of the company and not including others in the thinking and the innovation that could be so successful if they allowed that to happen. And what we really need to see is a shift from this 20th century way of thinking to a 21st century more efficient and profitable way of thinking.
Well, I certainly agree with that. Any further thoughts on why you think they continue the failure? And then let's get into more of these remedies. What is it going to take to get us to that next level? Dave or Steve?
This is Steve, and I completely agree with Ted, and one of the challenges I think we see today is that people are still believe they can be promoted into a leadership position or title, and that's what makes them a leader. And and they feel as though, well, I worked hard to get that, I earned that, and now I have more of a measure of control. And so I withhold information and I make people do things that maybe they don't want to do because that shows I have control, and they really misjudge what true leadership is all about. And they think of leadership more in terms of the 1950s, where there were some major corporations in this country in the 1950s and 40s that actually sent all of their management candidates to something called Fear School, so they could learn how to put the fear of God into people, and that was the way that you controlled the organization and made sure that it went in the direction you wanted to. And it had very little to do with leading people as much as it had to do with pushing people. And that is still so pervasive today, because people believe that if I share too much information or if I allow you too much freedom, then I lose control and there's no telling what's going to happen to the business that I've been put in charge of.
Absolutely, absolutely. And Fear School, go figure.
Yeah, yeah.
My dad needed to learn how to do that.
Yeah.
Ouch.
Dave, what would you say?
Well, I'll take a almost more personal tweak to it, and relate it to probably my own early confusion on the subject of leadership, and that is, I think, that in this country in particular, leadership positions often are pursued to satisfy a personal ego, and we kind of lose perspective of what really leadership is about. Leadership, true leadership, is that a group of people have chosen to follow. And Steve Keating just hit it really right, is that they confuse leadership with management. Management is I get awarded a title. But true leadership is people have decided to follow you. Martin Luther King had a beautiful construct of leadership that I loved. He said that true leaders love and respect those who choose to follow them. And that's a standard that I think the vast majority of people who claim to be in leadership positions really couldn't embrace, that they both love and respect those who are following them. I've actually used that in presidential races, and people say, who are you going to vote for? And I say, I'm going to use the Martin Luther King standard. I'm looking for that person who will love and respect me. Most years I don't find a candidate that I can vote for based on that.
Yeah.
So I have to resort to some other standard, but I've just always loved that as a way to think about it.
Wow. Well, so I've got so many questions follow up on each one of these comments and each position here, but let's start with, you know, so there's some serious problems out there, and Dave, I don't know how to vote for some of these folks either, but I think that's a great measure for what we should be looking for. There are a few great ones out there, though, aren't there? The question is, why so much of this this holding on to this 20th century style, people, you know, still going for ego, as we've talked about here. So there's got to be a play here around humility that has to take place. But I recently read an article in Harvard Business Review that said that oftentimes we're selecting leaders that are hard-nosed, pushy, and fear-based over the servant leader, even though statistically we know the servant leader produces better results.
Well, you know, fear-based leadership is easier than servant leadership. Mm. It's really for, pardon the expression, but a lazy leader, somebody that wants to get that will settle for compliance of their people rather than commitment. A servant leader earns the commitment of their people. A leader that leads by intimidation merely gets the compliance, and you can see some short-term results out of that compliance, but you don't get long-term success, and that's the difference.
Yeah. Well said.
Yeah, I completely agree. This is Ted again. I am writing a book right now, which I won't be calling Catalyst when it comes out, but that's what I'm calling it right now. And so don't look for Catalyst on the bookshelf about a year and a half from now. But the thing that I see changing us so dramatically, and the title hints at that, is there's 20th century leadership, there's 21st century leadership. Now, some companies have been using 21st century leadership for quite a long time. So it's just a moniker. You know, it's not like something happened all of a sudden and, you know, ding, we're in a new century. Some companies, for instance, W.L. Gore and Associates, the makers of Gore-Tex, have been practicing democratic leadership and what we're referring to quite rightly as servant leadership for a very long time and quite successfully. But I think the difference is that with the social media revolution, we're seeing it in countries with dictatorships first and more dramatically, because those people don't have a choice about whether they just move to another country if they don't like it. We, as employees, have a choice. Well, I don't like my employer. My boss is a dictator. I'm going to go find another company to work for. So maybe this change won't be as dramatic as the overthrows of some dictatorships recently, but social media is allowing people to see what options there are out there and allowing people to educate themselves much faster than we had years ago. We can use it. I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt. I could go on for hours.
No, I appreciate exactly what you're saying, and I'm grateful for this conversation. We do have to take a quick break, but when
sure.
we come back, let's keep that going, because I love the momentum. I'm telling you, I'm smiling from ear to ear just having this conversation with the three of you today. So thank you for being here. This is Max Brown and Roy Saunderson with our guests today, Steve Keating, Dave Carpenter, and Ted Coyne. And you're listening to Real Recognition Radio on the Voice America Business Channel. We'll be right back, so please stay tuned.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network. Relationships are the core of great businesses. Your employees are critical to the success of your business. Rideau helps you build positive relationships with your people. Rideau helps you inspire greatness in your people. We do it through the power of recognition and rewards. Rideau's clients are Intel, RBC Financial, Boeing, and Liberty Mutual. We're committed to our clients and our people. Together, Rideau and our clients create better workplaces, better businesses, and ultimately, a better world. Become a Rideau client. Find us at rideau.com. Rideau is the proud sponsor of Real Recognition Radio.
How do you become one of the best companies to work for? By appreciating people for who they are and recognizing them for what they do. That's real recognition. 82% of employees say that recognition or praise they receive at work motivates them to improve their performance. And companies who recognize their people outperform companies that don't by 30 to 40%. Those are real results. Become one of the best companies to work for. The Recognition Management Institute can help you get the results you need. For more information, visit realrecognition.com. That's realrecognition.com.
Is your business or organization operating as efficiently as it should be? There are five basic dynamics present in every workplace that can effectively derail any organization. Be sure to listen for What's Leadership Got to Do With It with Rick Thiemann. Rick and his guests will discuss how you can manage these five dynamics and improve your leadership skills. Leaders that want a successful business can't afford to miss this program. What's Leadership Got to Do With It is broadcast live every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, 10 a.m. Pacific on Voice America Business.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Real Recognition Radio with Roy Saunderson and S. Max Brown. This is what recognition is all about, getting real results in the workplace through meaningful recognition solutions. Now, let's get back to the program. Here are Roy and Max.
Welcome back to Real Recognition Radio with myself, Roy Saunderson, and Max Brown, and our guests today, Steve Keating, Dave Carpenter, and Ted Coyne. And wow, this has been an exciting discussion as we kind of go forward on leadership because, when I look at my own leadership style, I would say I was your traditional 20th century micromanaging a little bit there. And I've certainly learned in the last while, it's just like you just got to let go, go to trust, and set the principles and expectations and let people literally do the best they can. How has your leadership style changed over time? Steve, maybe we'll start with yourself.
Well, you know, I attended a Catholic military high school, and I don't remember anybody there asking me if I was willing to follow them, and I had to unlearn so many things that I learned there as far as the kind of the iron-fisted way of leadership, and it took me a long time, and you
yeah.
know, when I had my first management position, and I would ask someone to do something or frankly tell them to do something, and they would say, why do I have to do that? I felt that was a real challenge to my authority.
Mm-hmm.
And it became a very aggressive, confrontational kind of relationship because I felt like, how dare you? I've earned this position. And then I came across a company called Dale Carnegie Training and went to work for them. And the amazing thing about that organization was that they actually don't just teach the Dale Carnegie principles, but they lived them.
Mm-hmm.
And it totally changed how I interacted with people and how I saw my role as a leader. And I had so many great coaches and mentors there that told me things like, your words matter. And not only do your words matter, but how you say your words matter. And you know, that's where I first learned the concept of, if you're actually going to lead somebody, you need to care about them first.
So true.
Because if you care about them, it'll change the way you interact with them. And it'll become more about helping them succeed than making sure they help you succeed. And it was a 180-degree change for me, and it's one that I try to share with other people today.
Well, thank you for that. And it's true. We need sometimes that kind of orientation and education to really kind of make a paradigm shift in leadership.
Yeah, made a big difference for me.
Dave, what about yourself?
Well, I guess I come from the school of hard knocks, a lot of leadership failures. I think back to when I was about 21 years old and running a healthcare facility or a shift on one. And I walked in a room and saw a handicapped child laying in vomit. I actually had a child in my arms, so there wasn't much I could do. And I turned to one of the nurses, who was an elderly lady, and I said, Mrs. So-and-so, you need to get that child out of vomit. And she looked at me and she said, Mr. Carpenter, in my country, we say good morning before we issue orders. And that was the beginning. I could go on and on and on and on and on with, you know, leadership lessons the hard way.
Yes.
As to how to get the best out of people. My equivalent to Steve's appreciation for Dale Carnegie is Outward Bound. I'm a huge believer in their program. I think the stresses of the outdoors with a group of people you've never met before really, really does some fascinating things about teaching you about leadership. Incidentally, many of the people go on that course because they are not leaders back in their organizations and desire to go be the leader for a day.
Right.
And get quite confused as to what's really involved. And when you start dealing with people's lives, which some of the decisions you make out there are dealing with people's lives, hopefully you start to learn some better techniques. But the whole issue of leadership is a journey for me.
Yeah.
I am at best halfway down that road. I get to every day see people doing incredible things in terms of leadership, and frequently not because they have a, quote, leadership position, but just because they are really exhibiting incredible leadership in some personal dimension.
Mm-hmm.
And I also get to see people doing it just terribly, and reminds me to look at my own set of behaviors.
Yeah.
We all can kind of lose sight of how we are as leaders or how we look in the mirror. I don't know about you, but in my house, the mirrors are all designed to make me look thinner, younger, et cetera. And so, too, with all my behaviors, they seem to be almost perfect, and they're far from it. So to me, it's a quest. I love being around people who are just great leaders that I can continue to learn from. And like Steve, I've had some awesome mentors that way. And more importantly for me these days is the large group of mentees that I have in my Accelerate Success program,
mm-hmm.
where the real secret is that they are teaching me things. They think I'm the one teaching them, but I'm so grateful for all I learned from them. So the day I stop learning about leadership, I hope will be the day that I check out and move to a new address.
So there's a whole great deal of humility that's required to be a real leader.
I believe if you get that ego out front, you are missing the element. And if I had one recommendation for people who want to be a great leader, go to a great follower school. Oh, sorry, that's a little Dave Carpenter joke. every year, hundreds of thousands of people go to leadership school, and
yep.
nobody goes to followership school.
Mm.
If all of us were better at following, we would be better leaders, because Outward Bound taught me that at a given moment, our role may change from a leader to a follower just situationally. And yep. we have to be willing to slide into a different role and let somebody else lead. So I'm pretty big on followership. Love people who are willing to follow, who show expertise at being great followers, and work on that myself.
Okay. Ted, how things change for you over time?
I think a lot like these gentlemen, I guess nobody's a good leader when they start out. That's
yep.
just, how could you be? It's a learned
no.
skill, and you learn through trial and error, and a hell of a lot of error, at least in my case. My dad was literally a drill sergeant in World War
mm-hmm.
II. You could imagine.
So okay.
The nicest man ever. He was also naturally charismatic, which I just didn't have as much of. So when I began my career, I wanted to be a leader because my father told me how great it was, and I just measured up short compared to Dad. But I did know that when Dad spoke, people listened. And that doesn't work. It occasionally it does, but what you're using is coercion. You're using the implied threat of, I pay your check, so if you want to keep getting those paychecks every 2 weeks, you'd sure as hell better do what I say, pardon my French. Well, the thing is, that does not inspire a lot of people to give their all. Jim Collins has a great take in Good to Great where he talks about level 4 leaders and level 5 leaders. Level 4 leaders are what we're talking about, the ego-driven leader. And level 5 is the organization-driven leader. And what I found when I was running my business was that my biggest failure was slowing down enough to bring my people along with me. So when I decided to really focus on my leadership, I started working in nonprofits. I spent 2 years doing nothing but nonprofits because nothing will teach you how to lead better than having all volunteers.
Great point.
If people can just go volunteer someplace else, and you're out of luck. There's nothing over their heads.
you could lose your whole workforce if you aren't doing it right. Right?
Exactly. It was very humbling and very educational.
Mm-hmm. Now, a lot of people are caught up with the whole Gen Y, the millennials, and feeling that they're spoiled brats, and they don't seem to follow the way we would like to see employees followed. I mean, but in many ways, there's some reasons behind a lot of this. I mean, they don't want to be treated the same way their parents were in the workplace. I recall very clearly being laid off in healthcare and never expected that in a million years. They know that pensions and retirement programs are never going to be as good as they once were, so why stick around for the long term? And, of course, healthcare costs continue to go up, but meanwhile, CEOs get the high-paid salaries that they do and all the perks. So do you really blame them reacting the way they do? And what do you think about the new employees, the new young breed that comes into the ranks and files? Anyone?
Well, you know, we see a lot of, and hopefully it's a sign of a growing company, we see a lot of the younger generation coming in right out of college into our company at Toro, and you know, I think the attitudes are a little bit different, and they're willing to in some ways take more risks. They're not as tradition bound, and I'm a big tradition guy. The challenge with tradition sometimes is we don't remember how we started that tradition, and so we don't know if it's the best tradition in the world anymore. And the younger people will start your tradition, but I think it's healthy to have a variety of views. You know, when we talk about diversity training and valuing diversity, we tend to think about that, I think, more in terms of race than we do in viewpoints.
Yep.
And if we can have somebody ask a question about why we do something, and it, with a good motivation to really want to know and maybe try to improve it, I think that's incredibly valuable. And I don't feel that sense of entitlement that they believe that they're owed something. In fact, it's just the opposite. I think in many cases they're willing to work harder to achieve greater things because they believe that their success is more up to them than maybe people in my age group that believe in some cases they're almost owed success simply because of longevity.
It's a good perspective. Where does the entitlement really fall? That's right. That's right. That's good. Dave, your thoughts on the millennials and coming
well,
into the workforce?
I think the thing I always caution myself is all of us in management positions or decision-making can tend to put brackets around groups of people. And if there's one thing I've learned is that each and every person is different. They have their own set of needs. And the better I understand what their needs are, the better I can help them accomplish what they want in life. And I applaud the people who are coming in asking why so many of our big corporations do things the way we did 80 years ago when the world has changed as dramatically as it has. I do a lot of work around the concept of the success trap, where our current success breeds our future failure in a rapidly changing world. And I think these people who are coming in and questioning what we're doing in the context of the world that we currently operate in bring tremendous value. But they have a different set of expectations and needs, and it's the leader's really obligation to understand the pace and all of the different elements that those who choose to follow have as impediments. And once again, I go back to Outward Bound. If you have a member of your group that strains a calf muscle and is struggling to keep up with the group, that's not about whether the person's young, old, or whatever. It's about somebody who's got a calf muscle problem. And how can the group rally around that person, lighten their load, adjust for their load, maybe adjust the goals of the group? So what I've really concentrated on is hearing better people's needs. Man, I was clueless on people's needs. And once again, I'm only halfway down that road, but getting better at hearing not only what they say their needs are, but as I like to call it, the silence between the notes, what they're not saying about what they need.
Yeah. Well, these are all incredible good thoughts. I wish that more leaders would follow these kind of principles that you're giving to us today. We're going to take another quick break. So join us back in a few minutes on Real Recognition Radio as we continue to ask our guests, Steve Keating, Dave Carpenter, and Ted Coigne, more about leadership lessons learned. For Real Recognition Radio, this is Roy Saunderson and Max Brown.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
The next generation of employees is more sophisticated about recognition. They want to make a difference to their organizations, to their environment, and to their world. Rideau offers a full suite of recognition and reward solutions tailored to meet our clients' needs strategically, technologically, and globally. Rideau's clients are Intel, RBC Financial, Boeing, and Liberty Mutual. Together, Rideau and our clients create better workplaces, better businesses, and ultimately, a better world. Become a Rideau client. Find us at rideau.com. Rideau is the proud sponsor of Real Recognition Radio.
We've just come off of the Great Recession, but we're not out of the woods yet. What will our world be like when we get back on course? Will the course even be the same as it was? For the answers you need to weathering this recovery, tune in every weekend to Going for Broke, How the New Normal Can Work for You, with your host, Eric Hovey. We'll clue you into businesses, individuals, and communities that are already making a difference and show you how you can do the same. Going for Broke airs live every Saturday at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern Time on Voice America Business.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
You're listening to Real Recognition Radio with Roy Saunderson and S. Max Brown. This is what recognition is all about. Getting real results in the workplace through meaningful recognition solutions. Now, let's get back to the program. Here are Roy and Max.
Welcome.
Welcome back to Real Recognition Radio with Roy Saunderson and myself, Max Brown, and of course our guests today, Steve Keating, Dave Carpenter, and Ted Coyne. Welcome back to the show, gentlemen, and thank you so far for this conversation. I do have a quick question around what do you think we're really lacking when it comes to leadership? Dave, was it you or Steve? I can't remember who mentioned that maybe it was a lack of, or maybe just lazy leadership in that first segment when we talked about it. And that's why we rely on this fear-based program of push and command and control, because it's just easier to do as opposed to a servant leadership style. What do you think's lacking here? What do we need to focus on to make this make a change, to take this leap?
Well, you know, I'll take that one first, if you guys will. If I look at that and I look at why people tend to fall back into older habits, and even once they're exposed to servant leadership, they will tend to fall back sometimes into the old habits because it does seem to be easier. But when we do leadership training here, one of the things that we talk about is the benefit to the leader if they can build a stronger follower. And the best way, by the way, I believe, to build a stronger follower is to go into that with the mindset of, at some point, this person will need to be a leader. So I'm not really building a better follower. I'm going to build a future leader here. And if we can show the current leader the benefit to doing that long term to them, I think they begin to buy into it more. But so many organizations today, I think, are telling people you need to be a servant leader because you need to take care of these people, and they're told by a leader who's not a servant leader that they need to be a servant leader. And so they don't see the model of it, and they haven't experienced what a servant leader can do for them. And so they fall back into the older habits. And I think once they realize that the long-term benefit is far greater of actually taking care of your people and helping them become a leader on their own, then they begin to buy into it. But it takes a long time to do that.
Yeah, it does take time. Maybe that's part of the problem, is we're measuring too much by the quarterly statements, and there's too much pressure to get that done.
I think that's certainly true in publicly held companies, where the tendency, as hard as some fight it, is to manage by analysts and manage by the quarter, and to feed that quarter is a real challenge to overcome as well.
So would people challenge our conversation today to say that we just simply don't understand the needs of the market, that we're just out to lunch, that we sound a little bit too soft or even socialist and I'm very uncomfortable suggesting that, because I don't believe we are, but I feel like there's got to be some pushback to this conversation. Why are people defending the way that they're leading? Because we hear time and time again in the media right now of failure after failure after failure of a CEO or other people who do completely unethical behavior, or they gut a company and are highly rewarded for it without any concern for the losses or the people that they've devastated in their wake. And I feel like there's such a great cause, a great opportunity for business to be bigger than that and still do good business.
I'm a little more optimistic, actually, that the pressure of performance is causing poor leaders to get cast aside even quicker. There's just no place to hide anymore.
Okay, good point.
And so I'm really pretty bullish that way, that the combination of this tough economy, just general performance expectations, I think the cream's rising to the top. I do think that on a given day you can see some people messing up, but you know, we're talking in this conversation about a pretty high standard, and all of us being human beings, even with the best of intentions, I know I at least continue to do some things that, you know, at the end of the day, as I reflect on my behaviors in a given day, I go, it was at Stone Age, and not exactly exhibiting the best of leadership. So tough stuff, the things we're talking about today. Either the other people on the panel have all suggested they're on a journey. So let's cut a little slack to those who are trying to do good. And let's honor that one by one, the companies that are performing well are generally run by pretty good leaders, and if not, they get discovered pretty quickly and the axe will fall. So I'm bullish.
Okay, I love it.
I couldn't agree more. If I can jump in here, I love to study successful companies and try to figure out why they are successful and why they aren't. And one big reason is that I can say to people, okay, I ran a successful company from zero to a certain level, but if I'm talking to a CEO or chairman or top executive of a Fortune 500, he'll say, you know, I spend more getting my car cleaned than you ever made. Why should I take you seriously? So I don't just say, well, you know, Ted thinks this because it was successful for Ted. I say, well, let's look at Richard Branson. How does it work for him?
Yeah.
And that guy is a really good, he's just one example, by the way. He's a really good servant leader. He chooses the right people. He gives them a stake in the organization's success. And then he gets out of their way. And that is a very hard leadership lesson for somebody who is a control freak, but it's a very successful lesson. Do you want to be as successful as that man? He's got about, as of this show, I just read recently, as 400 different companies, 50,000 employees, that's about 125 people per company on average. He's doing something right.
Yeah, well said. Well said.
That is, Ted, I would agree, one of the hardest leadership lessons to learn is to give somebody the authority to do something and then actually get out of their way so they can do it.
Sure, because you sit there and you watch them and you say, oh, boy, I could do it so much better myself.
Yeah.
It is hard, isn't it? It is very hard. You know, one of the challenges, it seems, is there's a lot of research to suggest that, well, we all have blind spots. Oftentimes it's not very comfortable, even though we know we have them, that we really don't want to know what they are. And sometimes we might trick ourselves into thinking that we're better off not knowing. Where do you guys go? Because a moment ago, you know, we talked about the self-reflection and even at night thinking about, yeah, I could be better and I'm going to, you know, work on it even more tomorrow. And certainly I have mistakes that I'm going to make and continue to make as an imperfect human being. But how do we encourage that? How do we encourage that type of self-reflection to say, I'm not afraid of my blind spots. I'm going to learn more about them and see if I can make my game better.
If I can jump in here, I
yeah.
love to fail because I hate it, but it's so important.
Mm.
So there's absolutely that dichotomy. I can't stand whenever I get anything wrong, but I know that if I don't fail once, I'm not going to do it better the next time. I think the number of people who are so afraid to fail that they don't try frequently, that's a big reason that they're not successful. And this goes for companies as well as individuals.
Yeah, I would agree with that. As you know, we announced an initiative at our company to grow our business by 33% in 3 years, in what is still a tough market for us. And people were asking, what are we going to have to do to be able to do that? And I said, well, we better be willing to fail, because if you don't have some appetite for risk and being willing to fail, it'll be very, very difficult to succeed. And, I believe you can learn from failure, as Ted does, but I also believe that you have to have a willingness to be able to stand up in front of people and say, you know, we failed, but we learned.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll do better next time. And I think there are a lot of people that still see that, and certainly businesses today, that see that as a huge weakness to admit you've got something wrong. And until we can be willing to admit that, we probably don't have the courage that we're going to need to try to improve.
So it's a very good point. Often people get fired if they fail.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's not a whole lot of bandwidth for failure in a lot of places.
Slightly different take. I agree with the points that both Ted and Steve have made on failure, but going back to how do we sort of reflect on our own behaviors, one of the things I love to work with people on and challenge them, are they surrounded by an all-star team on a personal basis? And I am, and that all-star team will hold me accountable for slip-ups and will nudge me. So I have three different coaches at the moment for three very different things that are important to me. We've got a group of mentees that are always challenging me as to whether I'm walking my talk. Got a wife who's been kind enough to journey down this road with me for 39 years, who's not afraid to call me on my stuff. So I think a lot of it is ask a leader about their team, not their followers, but their personal advisory team. And you will see an amazing difference between the true servant leader and what that servant leader surrounds himself with versus those who are on an ego kick. That's all, I know it all, why would I need to even surround myself? I didn't work all these years to get to the top to then have to ask other people. So it's one of my trick questions. I love to ask people about their all-star team.
I love it. I love it. I appreciate all the responses today for these conversations. And to be frank with you, I do play a devil's advocate sometimes with where we're headed and why some of the same things keep coming up over and over. But like you, I do feel optimism for where we're headed. And this conversation today is one of those reasons for optimism, frankly, for me. So let's take a quick break. But when we come back, we'll finish up this show. And for me, it's gone far too fast. But we are talking with Steve Keating, Dave Carpenter, and Ted Coyne. And we will be right back for Real Recognition Radio. This is Max Brown and Roy Saunderson reminding you to keep it real.
The business community's first choice in Internet Talk Radio. Voice America Business Network.
How do you become one of the best companies to work for? By appreciating people for who they are and recognizing them for what they do. That's real recognition. 82% of employees say that recognition or praise they receive at work motivates them to improve their performance. And companies who recognize their people outperform companies that don't by 30 to 40%. Those are real results. Become one of the best companies to work for. The Recognition Management Institute can help you get the results you need. For more information, visit realrecognition.com. That's realrecognition.com.
Relationships are the core of great businesses. Your employees are critical to the success of your business. Rideau helps you build positive relationships with your people. Rideau helps you inspire greatness in your people. We do it through the power of recognition and rewards. Rideau's clients are Intel, RBC Financial, Boeing, and Liberty Mutual. We're committed to our clients and our people. Together, Rideau and our clients create better workplaces, better businesses, and ultimately, a better world. Become a Rideau client. Find us at rideau.com. Rideau is the proud sponsor of Real Recognition Radio.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Real Recognition Radio with Roy Saunderson and S. Max Brown. This is what recognition is all about, getting real results in the workplace through meaningful recognition solutions. Now, let's get back to the program. Here are Roy and Max.
Welcome back to Real Recognition Radio. We're going to finish up our conversation today with Steve Keating, Dave Carpenter, and Ted Coyne, our guests, and learn some just final pointers on leadership, and lessons learned. And for each of you, we want to thank you again for being on the show. It's been a very lively discussion. And I'd like each of you now to just share with us and with our listeners some kind of contact information or URL where they can reach you and learn more. And perhaps answer the question, what do you see happening for leadership in the future? What do you see happening for leadership in the future? Dave, why don't we start with yourself?
Well, first, with regard to connecting with me, my website is davecarpenter.com. Easiest way to connect with me is on Twitter, where I'm fairly active, and that's Dave_Carpenter. And where's leadership going? I'll repeat, I'm bullish. I think the cream is rising to the top. But I'll go back to something that Ted said earlier that I thought was really insightful. I think we're just beginning to understand the impact of social media on leadership. I think we are so embryonic on that. I think it's going to change leadership in corporations. It's already changing leadership in countries. And boy, do I look forward to learning and riding that wave.
Mm-hmm. Ted?
You can reach me at tedcoine.com, so the last name is spelled C-O-I-N-E, and also on Twitter. I just go by Ted Coine. And where do I see this falling out? The reason that I'm writing a book about this is that since about 1870s, we have been dealing with what I refer to as 20th century management,
mm-hmm.
20th century leadership. We're seeing a rapid, powerful break in that. It's going to take a couple of years to shake out, but certainly we'll say 5 years from now, we'll look back and say, wow, that was quick.
Mm-hmm.
Where enlightened self-interest and the enlightened part of it we've talked about, the self-interest part, it's more profitable. That will force companies to hire and promote people who believe in what we're referring to in this conversation as servant leadership, in inverting the pyramid and giving people the respect they deserve at work.
You guys can reach me, Steve Keating, at probably the best way is through Twitter, at Lead Today. And I respond to almost all of the ad messages. The DMs are hard to keep track of with my number of followers, but I do read every at message, so reach me there. And, you know, I'm pretty optimistic about the future, too, and I believe that the leader of the future will be more people-focused and certainly be more flexible, more willing to change and grow, and there'll be some that will be forced into that and some that will truly lead the way and do that on a very willing nature and set the model for what's to come in leadership. And, you know, we need to change, and I believe we will change.
Great. And one final question I think we need to ask is, for the practical everyday how do you lead, what would be one piece of advice that you would recommend for our listeners, whether they're emerging leaders or full-time leaders for a long time? What would be one core piece of advice you would give to people?
Never forget, it's not about you.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful. So I'll do the Martin Luther King, love and respect the people who choose to follow you. Write it down on your palm, on your forehead, and then live it.
Mm-hmm.
And one that I've been sharing with leaders and new and old for quite a while is, my job is to make your job easier. If the leader looks that way at his team or her team and actually lives that rather than just paying lip service to enable them to do their jobs better, that person's team will have immediate and dramatic success.
Indeed.
Wow, that's great. And Max, I know you had a wonderful opportunity of bringing our guests together today. Is there a final thought or question you would like to ask?
Well, I'm certainly grateful for this conversation. I'm grateful we could challenge, you know, past assumptions to be able to say, let's move forward. Let's do something different. And as we've all heard here today, the opportunities and the benefits of doing so are huge, and it'll make the lives of employees better. It'll make the lives of the company better. It's certainly better for shareholder returns. It's just, there's such a win-win in making progress on this subject.
Max, and I just want to, on behalf of Steve and Ted, thank you and Max for what you two are doing by having a show like this and getting information out on alternative ways of leading and your whole core of your company around recognition, I think, is so important. So kudos to the two of you for what you're doing. And I'm speaking only for myself. This has been great.
No, you're
well, we're very grateful.
I certainly agree. It's been a pleasure, guys.
Well, thank you very much. It's been an honor to have you with us. And we're, as Max said, we're all about abundance, and we're just trying to make the workplace a better place and build positive relationships. Well, we're going to have to close up our show right now.
To have you guys here with us. Thank you.
What's that?
I say it goes a long way to have you guys with us, so thank you.
You bet.
Absolutely.
With absolute pleasure.
Well, Steve, Dave, Ted, again, thank you for being on our show today. If people want to know more about the Recognition Management Institute and the Real Recognition Radio, they can reach us at www.realrecognition.com. And we certainly want to encourage your comments and suggestions, so please email us at feedback@realrecognition.com. We certainly look forward to hearing from you. Until next time, this is Roy Saunderson and Max Brown reminding you to keep it real.
Thank you again for tuning in Real Recognition Radio. Please join Roy Saunderson and Max Brown again next Tuesday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel for more motivational tips to help your employees perform better. We'll talk again next week.